Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to another installment of our Rav Dessler mini-series on the topic of addiction and free will. Last week, we introduced Rav Dessler's great addition to the topic of free will. I think today is a very important day to continue that discussion. You know, someone told me that Election Day brings back a simpler time for them, where people are motivated to do things by getting stickers. People get really excited by the idea. Oh, look at my sticker, look at my sticker. You know, it's kind of how we think of little kids being motivated to do things, and it's made its way full circle. On Election Day, when we have choices, just in time to vote. On Election Day, where it's all about democracy, we have sources in the back, where we're talking about democracy, the idea of having free choice. It's important to continue this discussion about what are the parameters of free choice, what are the parameters of what is typically called Bechira Chafshis, that we'll see at the end of today. Rav Dessler does not like that term, Bechira Chafshis, necessarily. Rav Dessler introduced last week a very sophisticated understanding of free will, where maybe not every decision that a person makes is governed with a 50-50 opportunity for a person to sin or to do right. There are a lot of things that we can relate to, which are not really a challenge for us because we've been doing them for so long that they're easy for us. And there are some things that are so beyond our scope, beyond our realm of mitzvot observance, that it would be hard to consider them to be within a person's wheelhouse. Rav Dessler called Nekudas HaBechira, the Bechira point, the area in the middle. He gave the beautiful analogy of two armies that are fighting, where we have section one, completely in the control of the Yetzer Hara, section two, which we arbitrarily called the area completely under the domain of the Yetzer HaTov, and then the section three in the middle, the part that they're currently fighting over. And that middle front, that battle front, is constantly shifting as the armies gain strength and value and push it back and forth. But at any given time, there's only a few, maybe a couple of things that are truly in a person's Bechira point. We left off with a very powerful question, a question we're going to have to address right now. And that question is, so if that's the case, that at any given point in time, most things are not truly in a person's Bechira point because they're either so far gone that they're not even a choice at this point, or they're so easy that a person doesn't have to struggle with them. So how does that affect Schar V'Onesh? And again, anytime we have a discussion about Schar V'Onesh, it's hard for us ever to know how the Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And far be it from us to have any definitive idea, but if Dessler's approach is going to give us some nuanced idea of what it means to have Schar V'Onesh for things that may not really be a free choice at this point, either because they're so easy or because they're so far out of our reach. So that's the topic we're going to pick up with today, understanding what Rav Dessler calls Achrayas HaBechira, the long-reaching effects of our Bechira, and how to understand Schar V'Onesh for things that may not be in Section 3, that are not currently up for debate and up for contestation. So let's share the screen. We'll jump back in. Let's make this bigger. Can we see on Zoom? We're good. All right, so Perek Gimel, on the top of page 115, you have the sources. Here we go. He says, Yesh hafresh gadol bin makom nekudas habechira shekavu min hashamayim. There's a big difference between, on the one hand, a person's Bechira point, which is influenced by their birth, when they were born, their temperament, their upbringing, and that's going to be a big determining factor of what's easy for a person, what's not even a question for a person, and what's actually a real challenge for a person. That's one type of Bechira point, predetermined, so to speak. That's one hand. Ubein asher kavu ha'adam ba'atzmo al yedei bechirosav hakodmos. A person actually shifts their own Bechira point with their previous choices. The more they engage in mitzvah habits, certain things that may have at some point been impossible start to become, step by step, plausible, 50-50, and then as they conquer it, maybe becomes really easy. A person who moves their Bechira point to make things easy, or a person does averos and moves things from being easy to being 50-50 to being totally no longer on the table, a person who moves their Bechira point with their actions is held accountable for that. Avur makom hanakuda shekavu ba'atzmo. That a person sets their own Bechira point with their previous choices, hinehu achray alav. That person is responsible for having moved the Bechira point to that point. Ka'amram zawar, it's underlined. Avara veira v'shinaba hutrilo. The Gemara says in Mesechas Yuma, daf pei vav, at the end of Mesechas Yuma, when a person does an avera and repeats the avera becomes permissible. What? The Gemara says, you think when a person eats the cheeseburger a second time, now all of a sudden they're allowed to eat a cheeseburger? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? You already started to keep on eating. That's what it means. The Gemara clarifies, Elanasis lokaheter. What Chazal say is once a person does an Avera and does the Avera again, after a person becomes habituated to the Avera, it's no longer an Avera in their eyes. It becomes permissible. They no longer see it as so bad. Rabbi Saul Salanter used to say, and by the third time, it becomes a mitzvah. Person does averos enough times, they can take it from being untouchable, to being, hey, this might be okay, to eventually, hey, this actually has a good rationale. Peresh, he explains where the asterisk is. Afal pi she'eino over ke'eis b'derech ha'bechira. A person can move the bechira point by engaging in a bad habit so many times. Shaharei ha'avera ke'heter hu be'einav. At this point, the avera no longer feels like a choice. It feels like a free decision because it's actually perfectly fine in their eyes. Mikol makom achrayhu. The person is responsible for what they've done. Al avra bepa'amim harishonos, because the person violated it originally when they had a free choice, and that moved it to a point where it no longer feels like a free choice. Sheze garam lo la'abed hergesh ha'isur. This is what actually led them to lose the sensitivity to the problem with the action. V'yanesh al asher asali atzmo ha'avera keheter. A person is punished for putting themselves in a position where the avera no longer feels as bad. Shal yedei zeh over achar kach aleh b'li b'chira. A person is responsible for putting themselves in a position where it no longer feels like a free choice to do it. This is going to be how we're going to address the question we ended off from last week. We wanted to know if there really are at any given time, most things are not really in a person's bechira point, so why is a person held responsible? The answer is at least for the things that a person chose to bring them to this point. He's differentiating between how a person was born and their upbringing, and now we're talking about a person's previous decisions led them to this point. They are responsible for putting themselves in a position where they are no longer able to choose because it became a habit. I like to think of this in terms of the butterfly effect. Butterfly effect is a term that is used in different disciplines. I think in the 1970s, it was originally coined by a person who was studying the weather. I don't know exactly what his title was, but he was having some ridiculous theory about some nuances about how a butterfly's wings flapping in one location could influence the weather and maybe a tornado happening a few towns over. Known as the butterfly effect. It's the idea that something small over here could have major impact for something down the line. Now, I don't understand the idea about the chaos theory and about this weather and tornado business, but the idea rings true. That a person's actions have many more consequences than a person may even realize. And we're going to discuss this as we go forward. A person's actions have long-term consequences both for themselves and for other people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to attribute not just the immediate consequences that a person does to their action, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu also continues to watch how that action unfolds, how it affects their own life, how it affects the lives of other people. And all those butterfly effects, all those long-reaching consequences as they affect the person and their children, and those around them. Those are all attributed back to the original action, because the original action carries much more weight than that. We're going to discuss tonight the idea that schar v'onesh is often misunderstood. When we teach little kids, we talk about this idea of schar v'onesh as a Dave & Buster's or Chuck E. Cheese or pick your favorite arcade. Right? You talk about an arcade, how does it work? You play the game, you get tickets, you have enough tickets, you go to the prize counter. If you have enough tickets for a prize, you get a very exciting eraser that you throw out, you know, 3 days later. Or 3 seconds later. But that's the idea of schar v'onesh, we think. We think you do a mitzvah, you get a note, you get a ticket, and everything's worth the same. Davening is worth this number, and giving tzedakah is worth this number. Oh, and a person eats a cheeseburger, that's worth this number of avera points, and then they have mitzvah notes and avera notes. What we're saying is much more sophisticated. It's all going to be based on how a person was born. What's the challenge for them? How are they educated? What's their background? But also, what have they done previously to put themselves where they are now? In short, to answer the question of why we say a person's responsible, or how can a person get schar v'onesh for things no longer in the bechira point, at least for the things that they chose to put themselves in section 2 or section 1, they're responsible for that. So let's use the example of addiction. A person who is currently not addicted to any substance, and then they start to drink alcohol or use a drug, and then it becomes from something that was in section 2, not a challenge at all, then it becomes a struggle because they sometimes are able to overcome the urge to smoke or to drink, and sometimes they're not able to. And then they use again and again and again, nasaloka has there, and over time, now they're just addicted to the substance. So now we said, person's been addicted for 20 years. So for that person to say they have free will to stop drinking in that moment, is that a good argument? Do they really have free will in that moment not to drink? They've been drinking for 30 years. It's a habit at this point. It's no longer a free choice. But they're responsible for the initial drinks that put them at a point where now they no longer have a choice to drink. And the punishment for a person drinking at this point is not so much that on this point the person is having a free choice and choosing evil. They don't have a choice at this point. But this becomes another long-term consequence of what they did 30 years ago. The action 30 years ago is not only punished for the immediate consequences right then and there on the spot, But if 30 years later the person is struggling, and 30 years later a person's at a point where they no longer have choice because they're so addicted, that's another long-term negative consequence of what they did 30 years ago. The schar va'onesh on that maisa 30 years later is really an addendum to the action 30 years earlier when they had a choice. When they made that choice 30 years earlier, it didn't stop right then and there. The consequences carry over as a person starts to become addicted. And the same thing is true as move a bechira point in a good direction or a bad direction. If a person moves a bechira point from a point where they didn't always daven, and they became religious and they started to daven, they daven every single day, and now davening is easy peasy, they daven so easily because it's no longer a struggle. So we asked, why should they get schar for that? It's an area too, it's totally in the Yetzer HaTov, it's no longer a struggle. Yeah, but by putting themselves in a position where davening becomes the norm, by putting themselves in a position where davening is easy, that's a butterfly effect of what they did 20 years ago when they worked hard to become the kind of person for whom davening is easy. The real schar and onesh for a person's actions outside the bechira point are really long-term consequences of what they did to put themselves in a position where it's out of the bechira point. You hear this? Pretty sophisticated, right? It's not the Dave and Buster's ticket. You do a mitzvah, you get a point. You don't have error, you get a ding. It's a very different idea. Person's responsible for putting themselves in a position where things are out of their reach, for good and for bad. That's the idea of what a person moves their own bechira point. How about the things a person is born with? A person's born in a certain society where certain things are off limits. They didn't choose their schools. They didn't choose their parents. They didn't choose whether they're born into a religious family. How does that factor in? So Dessler continues. Amnam harashin is chanech bo ha'adam. The evil things a person does that they were trained from a young age. B'lo yada hefchol. They never knew anything different. They never knew the opposite. Hineyu bezek yitinok shenishba lebein ha'akam. It's like a person who never had a chance. A person who didn't grow up religious, who grew up not knowing what Shabbos was, not knowing the Aleph Beis. V'lo ye'anesh ela alma ukefima. A person like this is only punished and rewarded according to how much and according to their own level. Shayetzarech lomod ledas. As much as they could have possibly been able to know better and learn better and have opportunities to grow. Only with what's in the scope of their bechira point. So it turns out not only is schar va'onesh more nuanced because it's not just a simple action that you just get one ticket for this mitzvah, or this mitzvah is worth three tickets and two tickets. The consequences continue to build and grow, and it's never ending cycle. Beyond that, each person has their own reward system. It's not the same for each person that all across the board, it's one ticket for this eraser or five tickets for this stuffed animal. It doesn't work like that. Each person has their own bechira point because each person was born differently and there's a different reward system for each person based on what was easy for them and what was a challenge for them. And this is what he explains in the next paragraph. B'chol bechira shebocher ha'adam, every choice that a person makes, osarosha b'chol matzava l'chol yomei chayav, has a lasting impact for the rest of his or her life. Im ma'at v'im harbei. Some decisions have a very minimal impact on the rest of their life. And some have a major impact on the rest of their life, on setting up things to be easier, setting up things to be harder, putting themselves in a position where they can give more tzedakah, less tzedakah, daven more often, daven less often, get into substances, get out of substances. Every decision the person makes is not just a matter for that moment alone, but it shifts the whole bechira point. And then the long-term consequences are attributed back to the moment where a person made a decision that pushed the point. Below Rakbo, now we get even more sophisticated, even more complicated, not only on their own long-term consequences. We keep talking about from the child's perspective. Child's born into a certain family, they didn't pick their upbringing. We're going to say that's really attributed to the parents. When a child is raised a certain way and a parent sets a child up to do mitzvahs, anytime a child does something that's easy for them because the parents gave them that chinuch, that's a butterfly effect of the parents. The parents set their child up to do things right, or in a case of a kid born in some inner city where they have violence, you raise the kid to do the wrong thing. The kid doesn't know any better because they grew up that way. That's a butterfly effect of the parents' decision. And the parents' decision is based on their own upbringing, their grandparents' decision, all the way back to generations. People who have passed on from this world continue to rack up schar va'onesh because the things that they've done in their lifetimes continue to have butterfly effects and long-reaching consequences for their offspring. Moshe Rabbeinu is still getting schar in Shemayim today because of what he put out into the world. Yerovam ben Nevat, the evil Russia, he's still getting onesh in Shemayim because of the things that he did, selling up the Gullus and the Korban Bayis Rishon, that's to his detriment. To Chazal say in Pirkei Avos, whoever is Mezakeh as a Rabbim can never ever find themselves without merit. Moshe Rabbeinu is their example. Whoever's machti as a rabbim gets the rabbim to sin is never going to be without chait. That's Rav Ben Avad. That's Chazal's example. The idea is a person's always held responsible. V'chol asher yisvateach mizeh ad sof kol adoros. Person for generations, forever and ever and ever, the consequences of what they set up for themselves and their families and their offspring and their neighborhoods. That's all attributed to their own actions. V'chol adam po'el al sevivav. A person, every person, has an impact on their neighborhood, on their surroundings, on their communities, on their shul, on their chevra. Your bechira point and your schar ve'onesh for your decisions that are within your bechira point are not just judged for that moment, but how they affect you going forward and how they affect everyone else's bechira points around you. And the offshoots of the offshoots of the offshoots, I'd self call it doros, that's the butterfly effect. Bitzara, to say it in short, kol bechira osa roshem b'chol ha'olam kulo. Every decision that a person makes in their bechira point is having a lasting impact on the entire universe. Wow, that's a big burden. B'chol asher yistavev min haroshem hazeh, al kulam achrai habocher b'bechirasa. And all the offshoots, all the butterfly effects that come out of it, this person is attributed and gets credit, or otherwise, for it. V'chein b'chol adam v'adam b'chol bechira bechira. Each person, each time they have a choice, we have to be overwhelmed. Kama yigadel schar habechira hatova. How overwhelmingly good can a person get rewarded for good actions, good choices? But kama tarba hachrayo shel habechira haraad. How detrimental, how long-lasting and troubling are the effects of a bad decision, putting a person in a position where they no longer struggle. What do we think of this idea? Does it make sense? You like it? It's nuanced? Sophisticated. I think it's very sophisticated.
Just not seeing it as it relates to the addiction.
To addiction. What do you mean?
Well, this second part that we're dealing with, I don't see how it connects with the addiction concept. Yes, everything that a person does impacts on them and impacts on others for the purposes of their bechira. But how does that play into the
addiction case? The question was, how did this idea, can we apply this idea specifically to the case of addiction? So I think the way to apply it to addiction is as follows. The person you look at that's been an addict for decades, at this point, they no longer have free will. So you look at them and you can say, Nebuch, it's not their fault. To some extent, you're right, it's not their fault. So why does the person bear any blame?
No, that was the first half.
Right.
The second half.
The second half, he's applying the idea that we have an impact on other people. So that may not be influential in a person's own decisions. But what if a person gets someone else to use drugs? Person gets a friend to use drugs, right? So then that person is responsible for getting their friend's bechira point to a point where they no longer have free choice. So the person's culpable for whatever level, what I'm actually using has some level of achrayus, responsibility for their role in it, but the person who sold it to them or hooked them or got them interested when they were a little kid, that person may bear some responsibility, right?
Or the other way around.
Yeah. Very good, right? The comment was made. Also the other way around, a person who helps someone else, right? Someone helps someone overcome an addiction, whether it's a counselor or a therapist or a family or whoever else is influential in getting a person to overcome an addiction. That's not just seen as something that's a one-time favor. You did one nice thing for me. The person gets their life back together. So then that every child they can have because they can get married, that child is accredited to those who help get the person sober, help get the person help, right?
How does that charge with Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Yishon?
The question was asked, how do we understand this idea within the context that a person's not supposed to listen to other people, a person's supposed to listen to Hashem? So you're saying a person shouldn't have free will because they're supposed to listen to Hashem?
He's saying that his addiction is not necessarily the result of the guy influencing him.
Uh-huh. The question was asked that why should we blame a person who gets someone else into drugs? That person has their own responsibility to do the right thing, right? So it's a fair point, right? There's always a hard line to know exactly where that cutoff point is between the ways in which we influence other people and the way and then to the point which we say, no, you're your own person. You're responsible for your own well-being. You can't blame me for getting you in trouble. You should have been able to be strong enough. Sometimes that's the case. And sometimes people have a really hard time. And even if that person's own bechira point, we say to that person, why'd you listen to this evil friend? As parents like to say, if your friend told you to jump off the Empire State Building, would you jump off the Empire State Building? So to some extent we say, you don't have to listen to what someone else peer pressures you into doing. So they have their own achrayas to shemayim. But to some extent, we do understand that a person who's violating lifnei iver, who gets someone else to sin, does bear some responsibility for setting someone else to take a fall.
You're touching this whole thing kind of the way we explained, like with Pyro, that how could she was forced to, because he chose to do it. A couple lines. One is he chose to do it, and only after the point where he already locked himself into it, to Hashem say, okay, now you're doing whether you want it or not.
Very good. The comment was made, I'll repeat it for the people on Zoom, that Paro, the question always becomes, why was Paro punished when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away his free will? To some extent, this really plays into that. When a person does something enough times and to the extent where it becomes destructive to a large extent, then maybe they're held responsible for putting themselves at the point of no return. Ilan, did you unmute?
Sher Husham.
Say again?
How does this square with Ba'asher Husham? Uh-huh. I just read in this very past week's
parsha. Plastic in this week's parsha, right? This week's parsha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says about Yishmael that he's judged for the way that he is now, and he's not judged for now for the person he's going to become, right? So I agree with that. I would say that a person is not going to be blamed now for what they do later. But once a person does those bad things, then we can look back earlier and say that moment was a turning point and the person's responsible at the moment when they did the first Avera for what happened later. They're not punished before they do it. We're not going to say we can anticipate 20 years of addiction based on this action, so you're punished now. Yishmael was still a little kid. Yishmael was still young and hadn't yet become the murderer he would grow up to be. So he wasn't punished now for what he'd do later. But when he eventually did things later, it could be that he was held responsible for the earlier actions that led him down that path to become that person, later after having already done it.
Yeah, but that doesn't square with the way we view Yom Kippur.
Yeah, what do you mean?
If based upon what you're saying, you can't really have true kapara, or for that matter, tara, but we'll just deal with kapara for now, on Yom Kippur. This doesn't square with anything that we learn about Yom Kippur with respect to the issues of Ben Adam L'Makom, at least.
Why?
Ben Adam L'Chavero is a different story. Maybe that's the offshoot of what you're having.
When a person does teshuvah, they're doing teshuvah for all the aspects of what they've done. So if part of what they've done is set themselves up for future averos, so then, again, part of teshuva means to stop what you're doing. So if it's hard to stop what you're doing, then it's harder to do teshuva. You're absolutely right.
But here's the thing. Let's say a person ends up doing teshuva at a point because they become addicted to some sort of chemical substance for doing this, for purposes of this shiur. They end up doing teshuva at that time, all right? And then they end up relapsing, let's say, 2 years after that.
Right.
All right? It's impossible from a chronological standpoint, let's say now going 20 years down the line, to attribute causation to the initial addiction or the subsequent addiction as to their ultimate spiraling down.
When a person relapses, it's because they've had some previous experience that set them up for it. So to some extent, their previous actions, when a person chooses to start up again, to whatever extent that's within their Bechira point, when a person chooses to start up again, that becomes another negative consequence for what happens earlier. Just like a person can do tshuva, be wiped clean, get tahara, kapara, however you want to call it, and then sin again. So a person can get kapara because at the time they're clean, but if they start something new, then they have to do tshuva for that again.
Right. What I'm saying is we're not talking about necessarily for that. We're talking about what's going on now 20 years down the line.
Right.
It's impossible to correlate the actions of 20 years down the line just to the second point of the relapse.
I agree with that.
Okay.
So just because something achieves kapara doesn't mean it can't come back if the consequences don't prove to be over.
Yeah, according to this, what I was saying is that then it turns to be that there was never originally kapara granted in the first place.
I disagree with that. I would say that when the person was clean and there's currently no consequences because they're clean, so then there is kapara for the earlier action. If it turns out that the earlier action then has later consequences because of a later decision in the person's bechira point, and that attributes back to earlier, why can't that come back?
Because it's not the way ultimately we run things. If we take that my example, now we extend it further, and let's say that the person starts down the path of the wrongful action because of what his father did,
mm-hmm.
right? Then isn't that person essentially being judged on account of ultimately what his father did?
Good.
On his
husband? So now you're asking the next question, which is, how do we view the other side? How do we view the things that the person inherited from their parents? So that's where I want to go next, right? So you're asking the right question. At this point, these comments were about what a person does to him or herself, and now you're asking the right question. And we're going to go to chapter 4. To be able to address this part of the aspect. And this is the aspect of what a person was educated to do. Very good. Right? So now we're leaning toward this aspect. So look at Perek Dalet, the bottom of the page. Misbar alanami kolze. What this leads us to conclude. Shezuchuyosav shel adam einan ha-mitzvot va-ma'asim tovim shenischanech behem. A person does not really get the primary reward and punishment for the actions that they do, that they were educated to do, that they learned from a young age. It's the choices that a person makes that fall within the purview of the Bechira point.
Ki kol asher nischanech bo, eino ela hachanas makom nekudas habechira.
all that they inherited from their education, from their schools, from their parents, from their temperament, anything that comes from a person's upbringing before they were old enough to make their own decisions, that just sets the stage for where the Bechira point is going to start. Shehi lo na'asis al yado. A person does not choose where that point actually begins. V'aschar ala ma'igia l'mechanchav, shekimu mitzvos chinuch b'masha midu al madrigas Bechira zo. As mentioned before, the real schar for what a child does is really attributed to their parents. Because it's the parents that set this person up along a certain path where the Bechira points are going to be a certain type. And now he's going to quote a Dvar Torah on this week's Parsha. How perfect is this? A Dvar Torah on Parsha's Vayera, which spells out this idea, where it's underlined. Mashagila lot bezeh hagod Rav Naftali of Nassan Tzvi Finkel. Nassan Tzvi Finkel was the altar of Slabodka, a great scion of Musar, and the founder of the Slabodka Yeshiva. He passed away in the 1920s. Rav Nassan Tzvi Finkel has a beautiful vort on this week's Parsha about the topic of Lot. He writes, Chesed haya chelko shel Avram. Avram Avinu was all about Chesed. Avram Avinu exuded Chesed in his house. The kol mishiro, whoever was zochet to be around and grow up with Avram Avinu, his ala b'chesed b'mesiras nefesh nora'a. Person was able to grow and become a phenomenal person in the area of Chesed. Kigon, on page number 2. Kigon Lot. Lot, who grew up in Avram's house. He was Avram's nephew. He was adopted by Avram Avinu. Kishapaga b'orchem hiftir b'hem ma'od. Lot, when he's encountering these malachim who come to Sodom, Lot has this idea of encouraging and really begging the guests to stay with him for Achnasas Orchim, even though in Sodom that was a very, very illegal thing to do. Lot was willing to give up his life to have these guests over stay in his house. The pasuk says, people were trying to break down his door, storm into his house, and murder Lot because he had guests over. And Lot was willing to go the extra mile. He knew that. He knew they were going to beat him up for that, and he still went for that. If Hashem had not intervened and made the people of Sodom blind, they would have actually come in and killed Lot for his actions. After the parentheses, so you see what a great tzaddik Lot was when it came to the Machnas Orchim. Lot was so devoted to the idea of Chesed, he was willing to risk his life and his family's life to have guests over. Here's the problem. Umeata. Masha Amar Akasa, the pasuk says in this week's parsha, but Yizkor Elokim as Avraham. Chadosh Baruch Hu remembered Avraham, and that's why Hashem chose to save Lot from Sodom. Rashi comments, Nizkar Shahaya Lot Yodea Shesara Ishto Shel Avraham. You know what Lot's great merit was? Rashi says, why was Lot saved? You know what I would have said? He risked his life for Achnasas Orchim. What a great person Lot was. He was a scion of Chesed beyond belief. No, Tamach Hazal say, what was Lot's great merit? Why was Lot saved? Kadosh Baruch Hu remembered that Lot knew that Sarah really was Avram's wife. B'shama she'amar Avraham b'Mitzrayim al Sarah achosihi. Lot heard Avram tell in Mitzrayim, and again, sorry, just that one time, Lot heard Avram tell Paro that this is my sister. V'lo gila hadavar, and Lot chose not to spill the beans, to ruin the secret. Lot didn't say a word. That was his greatest zuchus. What? V'hu mavhil? What is this? Sha'adam gadol achesed b'mesiras nefesh? A person like Lot who risked his life to do chesed for the malachim? Lo yechashav lo zeklum? He gets no credit for that? That's not going to save his life? Why doesn't he get credit for risking his life to do chesed? El yechashav lo shelo hayamasur. Limsor es dodo giso v'rabo lerotzchem. And his only merit is he didn't give up his uncle. He didn't give up his family to be murdered. That's his great zechus. You know, Lot, we really think very highly of you. Not because you risked your life to be able to have guests over when that was illegal, because you were a pillar of chesed par excellence. No, no. Lot, your great merit was you didn't murder your own uncle and your own aunt by giving them over to Paro. What does that mean? Why would that be his great merit? The Alter of Slabodka explained where it's underlined. Mikam l'madnu. From here we see. Shekol ma shemagia li'adam al yedei chinuch. That which comes easy to a person because they grew up with it. Afilu ad kidei mesiras nefesh, even if they go the extra mile and they exhibit it and they use it to the highest degree, einam madrigas ha'adam hamitis. That's not really where they're holding. That's not really their great acts of bechira. Because Lot grew up in Avram's house, the idea of doing chesed was rote. The idea of doing chesed was obvious. The idea of doing chesed was something built into him. And even though he took it so far and he was willing to even give up his life, Avram Avinu, at the beginning of the Parsha, also runs away when he's sick and he has this mila and he still fights to have guests over. If Lot grew up in the house of someone with that caliber, It's not no wonder that Lot became a person who did chesed. Chesed was easy for Lot, and therefore it wasn't a great merit for him. On some level, he did something right, but that wasn't a life-saving thing. You know what it was? Umahu madrigasa. What was his great merit? What was his great level that he achieved? Mashem mezgaber al yitzro bedavar shelo lamad. The idea of overcoming something that was hard for him, something he had not learned. Think about Lot, and you see in last week's parsha how his sheep are stealing people's food, how he's enticed by Sidon, this glamour, this lavish lifestyle. What do you think Lot would have gotten had he revealed this secret? This guy over here, that's really not his sister, really that's his wife. Lot could have become rich. For Lot, that was his Bechira point. That was hard for him. For a person whose nature was greedy, for a person whose nature was to be nosy, for a person whose nature was to be someone who would reveal that secret, for Lot not to reveal that secret was an act within his Bechira point, and that's where he got the schar.
This is anti-good parenting?
What'd you say?
This is anti-good parenting.
Are we saying that a person should not bother doing things that they were trained to do?
Be bad if you get to learn.
Should a person
learn on their own?
Should a person train their kids to be bad? So when they do,
be able to just let them learn on their own.
Okay, so the next paragraph is going to address that question a little bit about parents are almost setting up their kids for failure when they. Your question basically is: if you raise the bar so high for your kids and it becomes natural for them, then when they do great things, we say that's not so great. The point he's making is that everyone has opportunities that are great. Because a person doesn't learn everything. A person can't possibly be perfect in everything. Chesed happened to be Avram's thing. Maybe when it came to Gevura, that wasn't Avram's thing. Gevura, for Lot to withhold and not share this information, he wasn't trained that way. And that was a challenge for him. Maybe for Yitzchak, who was all about Gevura, maybe Chesed was hard for him. But he also grew up in Avram's house. So there's differences based on a person's temperament and what they have. A lot of different factors, an infinite number of factors. But the idea is that we see Lot's real schar came not for what came easy to him, not what he grew up with, but Lot's real schar was the thing that was a challenge for him. And this is our practical takeaway for tonight. The next paragraph we'll end off with. V'nei rov b'nei adam, for most people, im gam chonchol l'mitzvos l'masim tovim, if they've grown up with a good upbringing, and they're shomer Torah mitzvos because they went to good schools and had good parents and good siblings and all that stuff, yasu mitzvos anashim milumuda. They do mitzvos because that's what it's habit. They go to shul, put on tefillin, they wear tzitzis, make brachos. They don't steal, they don't murder. V'im, ki ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekapeach schar al birya. This is an important point to make. No one's being shortchanged. The person is going to get schar for doing the action. V'gam v'ad zeh yeshulam lahem. They do get schar for putting on tefillin. In that sense, the small schar would be that they haven't done anything in their lives that pushed their bechira point to a different point where it becomes a challenge and ultimately too hard for them. So they get some sort of schar for doing the things that are easy for them. No one's getting shortchanged over here. But here's the kicker. Av mikol makom kinyan madregos, the idea of growth, the idea of acquiring new levels, tahaynu bechiras hatov, truly making bechira points, truly making decisions within the bechira realm, kimat she'ein lehem. People like that are not making decisions within that point. People who are born perfect. People who have the greatest upbringing and never struggle with anything. And they don't choose to push themselves beyond that comfort zone. They are never truly facing a battle. And they are never truly growing. Or it's underlined. The right thing for a person to do, the great thing for a person to do is to take that foundation of proper upbringing as a preparatory stage to say, this is my Nekudas HaBechira, this is where I was placed on the scene. Aval yasim kol mabato la'alos mala mala. But then to look and say, this is where I'm starting. How can I grow from where I am? Hein b'maseh, hein b'chavanat halev. Whether it comes to a person's actions or a purification of what a person does. You might think a person is fortunate and privileged if they grew up with a certain high level of Kedusha, but that person has a different challenge, and their challenge is it's hard for them to grow because they're complacent. They look around and say, everyone else isn't giving tzedakah, and I give tzedakah. Yeah, but you make $100 million a year, and you give $10,000. So for the people around you who look poor, that seems like a real challenge, and you're succeeding. But for your Bechira point, that's not a big deal. You were born wealthy. For you to give $10,000 isn't much. For a person born with a certain righteousness and patterns of behavior, making brachos and davening, their Bechira point is not going to be where they're starting. That's their starting point. They have a challenge of looking around and saying, how can I grow? Like we said last time, if a person, for them, davening is easy. The idea of saying the words and coming to shul on time is easy. The challenge is kavana. The idea is for a person to grow in areas that are maybe lofty for a person who hasn't gotten down being on time for shul yet, or going to shul at all, or davening at all. As a person achieves more levels, the expectation is for them to grow. Think of a person when it comes to weight training. If you don't constantly add on new things and you don't feel that resistance, you don't feel that Bechira point, you don't feel that point of struggle and contention, you're not really growing. You know, you're doing the 10 pounds and it feels easy. What are you showing off for? You're not growing any muscle. You're just lifting the things that are easy for you. You don't want to go to things that are way too heavy for you and are going to break your back, but you want to do things that are a little bit challenging. And as you grow, the challenge grows. And as you grow further, the challenge grows further. Another 10 pounds, another 20 pounds, lifting 100, lifting 200, lifting 300. As the person grows, they keep growing. If they stay stunted and stilted by only working on the things that came easy for them, here it is again. This non-Dave and Buster's approach to Schar Va'onesh. Just because a person does more mitzvos on paper than someone else doesn't mean their schar is greater. If their Bechira point was much different because they grew up in a home where everything was easy and saying brachos and going to shul and davening without kavana is easy, and they're not pushing themselves to add on weights or to grow, they're not really getting schar. They're getting something, but they're not really getting the ikar schar. The ikar schar is for Bechira points, when a person has to struggle with something and to move the line. And as they move the line, those things become butterfly effects of earlier decisions where they push the line. But they keep growing. When Chazal say a great tzaddik is punished, kichud asara, for the small little things, a machshava here, a machshava there, for a regular person, they wouldn't be held accountable. But for a great tzaddik, for the avos, for Moshe Rabbeinu, on their level was a sin. So we could just be saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu expects great things from his people. But now we're saying something much more nuanced. When a Kadosh Baruch Hu is punishing people, punishing great tzaddikim for the small things, it's because that's their bechira point. That's where they're up to. Anything less is easy. And maybe they worked hard to get where they're at, and they get schar because they put themselves in a position where it's easy. But what's in the Bechira point now? Kichod Asara, a kavana here, on their level, it was wrong to say this. That means that for them, that's their Bechira point, because everything lower than that would be lifting 10-pound weights, and they're not growing. And they're not growing. That's a goal of a person, to grow. For a person to constantly grow, for a person to realize, I can't be complacent. If I'm only doing the things that are easy for me, am I really growing? Skip down a couple of lines. He says, the nimtza, at the end of the line, maybe five lines lower, the nimtza shekol ma'asav tiyena zechuyos. A person can actually turn themselves into constantly growing, getting zechuyos, by looking for where there's a battle, looking where there's a struggle. V'zeu she'amru chazal b'mishna sof meseches makos, ratza kadosh baruch hu l'zachos es Yisrael. God wanted to give us a great zechus. L'fichach hirbulam Torah mitzvos. He gave us lots of Torah mitzvos. Some have argued, it's really annoying. Why didn't God give us like nine mitzvos? What does it mean it's a zechus for us to give us more mitzvos? People who aren't Jewish, who only have seven mitzvos, they also have bechira points. They also have schar va'onesh at their points, but they only have a few areas to have bechira points over. V'im came for people who aren't Jewish. They're also able to grow at their levels. Aval Hashem Yisbarach ratza sheyu kol chayei b'nei Yisrael meleim bechiros tovos. We have 613, and those are just the counted officially mitzvot. There's many more than tarag mitzvot. Many, many more opportunities for mitzvot and good things. All of those things are a zechus. You know why it's a zechus? Because no one can ever look around and say, I'm done. I perfected everything. We have tarag mitzvot. Why is that a zechus? Because there's so many areas a person can say, yeah, I've mastered this. This is easy for me. Generosity is easy for me. But what about davening? Davening is easy for that person. What about giving tzedakah? What about chesed? What about sensitivity? What about trust in Hashem? For each person, the Bechira point is different, because for each person, they start somewhere different. And they're not judged based on the objective tickets of Dave and Buster's. They are judged based on where they start. They are judged based on what they do. They are judged based on what decisions they make that influence themselves to become people for whom things are easy and hard. And they're only mainly judged for the areas in which they're challenging. And if they're not being challenged, then they're not growing. And if they're not growing, they're being stunted and missing out on a critical component of Schar Va'onesh, where it's underlined at the end, kifi rochav chazis ha-melchama, because according to the number of battle fronts, yisrabeh ha-makom l'ma'ase gevura, there's more opportunities to overcome, more opportunities for growth, v'yigdal erech ha-netzchonos, and that's more opportunities to win battles and to succeed. I'll end off with the following story, I think really illustrates this point so beautifully. Rav Shalom Shvadron was the Maggid of Yerushalayim. He was the mentor of Rabbi Pesach Kron. Rav Shalom passed away in the 1990s, 1997, I believe, and really was the Maggid that really inspired Rabbi Kron to call all his books the Maggid series. Rabbi Kron writes a story in one of his earliest books about Rabbi Shvadron, who started the Kirov program. He was working around Yerushalayim, and he had this idea of young boys who were not from religious families. They come out and they would learn Torah. There was one boy, Avi, an adolescent, who was very inspired. Other kids weren't so into it. Avi was really into everything. Avi was constantly coming to this Night Seder program to learn more. He was thirsty. He was eager. He was so enthused and really spreading his enthusiasm to everyone around him. But then one Monday night, Avi didn't come. And the next night, he didn't come as well. And 3 days in a row, he didn't show up to the program. Rav Shadron was concerned, maybe Avi's not well. He looked up the boy's address in his registry, and he found the boy's house, and he traveled. Rav Shadron, this great Rosh Hashiva, frock, he goes to this boy's house. Boy, he's not religious. He goes to his house, knocks on the door, and Avi himself opens the door. And the Maggid says to him, "Oh, I'm happy to see you're on your feet, happy to see you're well. How are you doing?" The boy looks a little sheepish, and he says, "Fine, fine." He says, "We miss you at the program." He says, yeah, I really enjoyed it. He says, "Is something wrong? Did you not really find it meaningful enough?" He says, "No, I plan to come back." He says, "So what's going on right now?" He says, "Well, right now, I'm just embarrassed to say this, but the reality is that there's a soccer tournament going on. And, you know, normally before I was fine to go, but now that these soccer games are on TV at night, I feel like I really want to watch them. But as soon as the soccer games are over, I plan to come back." And Rav Shadron says, "Oh, the soccer sounds really important to you. Could you tell me more about this game?" Was okay, this Haredi man doesn't know what soccer is. He explains it. There's this field and there's this ball. You have to kick the ball into the net. And the rabbi says, "Well, it doesn't sound so hard. Well, why are you watching it on TV? I just passed a field on the way here. Let's go right now and we can kick the ball in the net." And the kid says, "No, it's not that easy because there's defenders and then there's a goalie, there's a keeper, and he protects the net. It's not so easy." And the rabbi says, "Well, does the keeper live on the field?" "No." "Okay. So let's wait till the keeper goes home. Then we can score as many goals as we want. And we can win and we can go back to yeshiva." The kid says, "No, it's no challenge to kick the ball in the net when there's no goalie. It only counts if there's resistance. It only matters if it's hard. If there's no defense and there's no goalie, then the goal really has no value." And the rabbi said, "Exactly. If you only come to yeshiva when it's easy and there's nothing else going on, there's no soccer to watch, there's no anything else occupying your attention, it's great. It's very nice that you've come. What really shows someone of growth, what really shows a person who's able to put this to practice and really grow, is when a person's able to study and able to do it when there is resistance. When a person's able to do it when it is challenging. When a person has other things they could be doing and instead chooses, I'm going to persevere. If we only choose to do mitzvos when they're easy for us, in Rav Dessler's terms, we're missing out on our Bechira point. We're missing a chance for true schar ve'onesh, and we're missing a true chance for growth. To increase the weights, for a person to actually build muscle and actually achieve great things. If we only go to Maariv when the weather is perfect, and we live next door like some people, if that's the only time you go to Maariv, so then it's not nothing. A person gets rewarded for what they're doing, putting themselves in a position, very nice. But if there's no resistance, if there's no challenge sometimes, then what's it really worth? It's worth something, but not much, not as much. It's those moments when it comes to tzedakah, when it comes to anything, whatever a person is struggling with, each person, like we said, has their own starting point, has their own bechira point, and it moves throughout our lifetimes. The times in which we find it's harder to be nice, or it's harder to be patient, or it's harder to be present, or it's harder to be home, or it's harder to be honest, integral. If that's where it's challenging, that's where it's a growth opportunity. If there's no goal, then there's no goal. If we're not lifting weights that are heavy for us, well, then we're not lifting weights. We're not building muscle. We're standing there pretending to grow. Look at me, putting on tefillin every day. Look at me davening every single day, giving a penny for tzedakah every single day. A penny for your thoughts. That's what they're worth, a penny. But what if they're challenging? What if they actually push us? The question was asked last week about how are we supposed to know where our bechira point is? If it hurts and it's hard, that's the bechira point. That's where growth happens. That's where strength is built. That's where a person becomes a greater person. And what's hard today may soon become easy peasy. Because you've gone, no matter what, you haven't missed a minion in 20 years, or you've given tzedakah for so long, or you're always home, or you're always patient, or you're always honest. And then when that happens, you're credited for a time when it was challenging, and you pushed the needle, and you became a person for whom it was no longer a challenge. You pushed yourself to a different bechira point, to a different level. And that's schar is attributed to a person. So to summarize our takeaways for tonight, we continued our discussion about the Bechira point, understanding a nuance of Schar Va'onesh. It's not this ticket system where everything is worth the same. A person has long consequences, long reaching for themselves and for their children and for those around them. All of that is attributed to what a person chooses to do when it's hard. It's an opportunity for us to recognize that just because something is easy for a lot to do chesed, he grew up with it, it's obvious for him, that's their starting point, that's not as meaningful. That's not the zechus that saved his life compared to overcoming his greed, overcoming his big mouth that was maybe harder for him. That's where his Bechira point was. That's where he actually got the schar. That's where the meaning is found. It's a chance for all of us to look around and say, when something is hard, that's the time to buckle down. That's when it has the most meaning. So now, the question we're left with is kind of like Yulam was hinting last weekend today, and the question is, why is it fair that certain people are born in one matzav or in another matzav? Why are certain people born with certain privileges in one direction or another? Hopefully we'll pick up with that topic as we talk about that next week, Tuesday night, 8:15. Looking forward to seeing those who are able to make it.